This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Suhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
the author of a bombshell book on South African President Jacob Zuma has attracted death threats and demands by the state security apparatus to withdraw the book. The book, which covers Zuma's alleged illegal dealings, has quickly sold out and gone into reprint just weeks after hitting the shelves. The author, journalist Jacques Poe, said at the official book launch this week that he will not back down.
That's VOA's Anita Powell reporting. We'll have full details coming up.
Also, Liberian presidential candidate George Weah is urging his supporters to stay calm while waiting for a decision in the runoff election, and Ethiopians are closely watching the legal case against Saudi Ethiopian billionaire Sheikh Mohammed Hussein Al Amoudi.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, the author of a bombshell book on South African President Jacob Zuma has attracted death threats and demands by the state security apparatus to withdraw the book. The book, which covers Zuma's alleged illegal dealings, has quickly sold out and gone into reprint just weeks after hitting the shelves. The author, journalist Jacques Poe, said at the official book launch this week that he will not back down. VOA's Anita Powell brings us this report from Johannesburg.
All this for a book. More than 1,000 people crowded into the mezzanine of a high-end Johannesburg mall to meet the author of South Africa's latest literary sensation. Jacques Poe's The President's Keepers sold out just 2 days after its release, not only because of the book's dishy content. Days after its release, the book got a boost from the State Security Agency and the Tax Authority. The security agency sent a cease and desist letter to Poe, demanding that he withdraw his book from public sale. The nation's tax authority said it may investigate Poe for releasing confidential taxpayer information. Poe also says he received a death threat this week. Among the many explosive claims in Poe's book are that the nation's spy chief set up a parallel shadow spy agency and poured nearly $100 million into it. Poe also takes on President Jacob Zuma, who he claims drew a monthly income of some $100,000 during his first term and did not report it to authorities. Poe stands by his reporting, and his publishers and booksellers are refusing to give in.
I must also thank our marketing agency, the State Security Organization, for what they have done to help us sell the book.
That is the CEO of the popular exclusive books chain, Benjamin Trisk, who hosted this week's launch that ended early after the mall's power suddenly, suspiciously went out. The book's popularity, Poe says, stems from South Africans' growing hunger for the truth. Scandal has dogged Zuma for years, and he has withstood 8 no-confidence votes in Parliament, thanks to the ruling party, the African National Congress. But there are signs that the party, too, is turning on him, and all eyes are on ANC's political conference in December, where they may ask Zuma to step down early. NB Publishers marketing manager Nikki Stubbs says the book's popularity is shocking. In its first days on the shelves, the title sold more than 16,000 hard copies and more than 5,000 e-books, a South African record. She told VOA it is not letting up.
It's a reprint to the scale that we ran out of paper in South Africa. And we've had to reprint the second reprint, I think, on different paper while we wait for extra paper to be shipped in.
VOA called the ANC and the president's office seeking their thoughts on the book. They did not answer our calls, and so far have not commented publicly. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Liberian presidential candidate George Weah is urging his supporters to stay calm while waiting for a decision on when an election runoff will be held. The former international soccer star yesterday told his supporters there will be change in the country and praised them for maintaining peace since the nation's Supreme Court delayed the runoff to allow an investigation into fraud allegations during the first round vote. Weah was to have faced off against Vice President Joseph Boakai on Tuesday in the second round vote. Neither man captured more than 50% of the vote, forcing the runoff. The third place candidate, Charles Brumskian, filed court challenges to that vote, alleging improprieties and fraud. No date for the runoff has been set. The winner will replace President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf.
Farmers in Tanzania are taking on their local governments in a big way. The smallholder farmers usually do not have a voice in decisions regarding their farming businesses. However, through their own initiative and with the help of a project developed by ActionAid USA, the women now can hold their governments accountable by tracking how and where public money is spent. In addition, they are demanding government support and services that they need. Chris Cox is Director of Communications at ActionAid USA. He spoke with me about how the smallholder farmers are taking charge of their livelihoods.
Up to 80% of Africa's food is produced by local farmers, and the majority of those farmers are women. But often what actually happens is in many African countries, women don't actually have control over the land that they're farming or access to a lot of the tools and techniques that they need in order to make their farm successful. What we found in Tanzania was that there was a great project that the government was supporting outside of the capital, Dodoma, in an area called Chamwino. And essentially, as part of the project, the farmers had access to small pieces of land that they put into this bigger vineyard that was producing grapes. The problem was that all of the farmers were harvesting grapes at the same time, which meant that all of the grapes were being released onto the market and prices were really diving. And the income that the farmers were getting wasn't sufficient in order to be able to maintain their farms. So as part of the project, the government had committed to building a processing plant. And the processing plant was really important in that the farmers would be able to deliver their grapes, have them turned into grape juice, and they also had an agreement with a local wine producer who would use the grapes in order to produce wine. And the idea being there that they were able to maximize the income that they were making. But ultimately what's happened is that the farmers started growing grapes themselves. They started using their own savings to invest in the land. But the processing plant was never built. So the problem there was obviously that the farmers were left with loads of grapes, but the markets that they had access to was very limited. The auditing that the women farmers themselves started doing is all designed really looking at the promises that the government had made and the money that was committed to support this project and where it's gone and looking at the reasons as to why this processing plant hadn't been delivered. In the course of doing the work, they've developed better connections with the local government ministries, which has obviously meant that they're better able to target the spending and deliver some of the services that farmers needed. And they've also got a commitment that the government will follow through with its promise and deliver this processing plant that they need to really maximize their income.
So going forward, are they going to go ahead and build this plant?
I was in Tanzania in July, and when I left, I had spoken to a local official who's responsible for agriculture policy, and he said that they were about to sign a contract with a company to build the processing plant. That has come as a direct result of the community members, these local women farmers, being much more involved in the direction of the project. And this is an approach that ActionAid takes across our work with local farmers. We work in more than 18 countries in sub-Saharan Africa. And we, you know, really working at the local level to get farmers more involved in agriculture policy, because often what we find is that farmers, they're doing a lot of the work and they're producing up to 80% of Africa's food. But when factors change, so issues like climate change happen, farmers are the first people that will go hungry. What's really important here is to have farmers much more connected with agriculture policy so that they can firstly really make sure that the services that they needed are provided for in public budgets, because the government is the biggest investor in agriculture in Africa, and that's vital for the success of agriculture going forward. But also to make sure that what the farmers really need in order to expand their farms and to make their farms a success, and that's really covered in terms of what's being delivered.
So I guess the women feel empowered to really do something And it has worked.
The really important part of this work is that it is local farmers that are taking the initiative, and they're the ones that are driving forward this work. And this is really important because in order to be sustainable and to have long-term impact, it needs to be local farmers that are taking the lead.
That was Chris Cox, Director of Communications at ActionAid USA. He spoke with me from Washington, D.C.
Ethiopians are closely watching the legal case against Saudi Ethiopian billionaire Sheikh Mohammed Hussein Alamoudi. Alamoudi is estimated to be worth nearly $10 billion. This week, he is confined to a hotel in Riyadh, along with dozens of other wealthy men arrested in a Saudi corruption crackdown. The charges against Alamoudi aren't clear, but a company spokesman says he rejects the allegations and the case won't affect his businesses. Henok Gabisa at Washington and Lee University School of Law in Lexington, Virginia, tracks Alamoudi's career. He told VOA's Salem Solomon that Alamoudi has invested $3.4 billion in Ethiopia in oil projects, gold mines, agriculture, and in the manufacturing of cement. Alamoudi was born in Ethiopia in 1946 to an Ethiopian mother and a Saudi father. He moved to Saudi Arabia in the 1960s and made his first billion 2 decades later, building an underground oil storage facility. His empire has grown across Europe, the Middle East, and Africa. However, Gabisa says that since Alamoudi has Saudi citizenship, there are legal concerns about his projects in Ethiopia, which restricts foreign investment.
Meanwhile, the U.S. State Department is calling on Saudi Arabia to pursue the prosecution of top officials and members of the royal family in a fair and transparent manner. The reaction comes after a sweeping purge of top Saudi officials on Saturday by Saudi King Salman and the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, known as MBS. VOA's Mary Mata has more.
Dramatic developments in Saudi Arabia have the entire Middle East on edge, with the sudden arrests of Saudi Prince Awalid bin Talal, one of the richest men in the world, along with other royals, government ministers and investors, who are in custody in the Riyadh Ritz-Carlton Hotel. President Donald Trump tweeted out his enthusiastic support for the crackdown. State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert has this reaction.
We continue to encourage Saudi authorities to pursue the prosecution of people they believe to have been corrupt officials. We expect them to do it in a fair and transparent manner. We call on the government of Saudi Arabia to do that. I'm not going to have a lot for you on this matter.
Asked if the State Department agreed with President Trump's endorsement, she referred questions to the White House. Analysts say the Saudi leadership is trying to respond boldly to a number of challenges, including clamping down on rampant corruption and confronting its arch-rival, Iran.
These arrests fall into, at least nominally, into the clampdown on corruption. What has raised eyebrows, and it may have a mixed effect, is that because these arrests are so high-profile, one of the folks arrested is worth $500 billion, well known in the U.S. Another one, others very prominent. You know, imagine in the U.S. waking up one day and discovering that Bill Gates and Warren Buffett were arrested. Would that inspire confidence in your economy?
Asked if she is concerned that the mass arrest could be destabilizing, Nauert blamed another country for that.
I think we know exactly where the responsibility lies in the region for much of the destabilization, and we've seen the activities of Iran. We've seen the activities of Iran in Yemen. We've seen the hand of Iran in Syria. We've seen the hand of Iran elsewhere.
With Lebanese Prime Minister Saad Hariri resigning Sunday from Saudi Arabia, some experts are worried about the possibility of conflict in the region, already raging in Yemen. Amr says he hopes Secretary Tillerson will be able to calm the waters.
I believe that Secretary Tillerson also has the knowledge and ability to do this that he brought with him from his years in Exxon, where he was already managing competition and conflict among Gulf states. The question for me is whether or not President Trump would like that.
Amr says that if Trump plans to shake up the Middle East like he has shaken up U.S. politics, it could be a very dangerous game. Mary Mata, VOA News, the State Department.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yihyi Suhib. 20 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. The book, which covers President Jacob Zuma's alleged illegal dealings, has quickly sold out and has attracted death threats to the author. Liberian presidential candidate George Weah is urging his supporters to stay calm while waiting for a decision on when an election runoff will be held. And Ethiopians are closely watching the legal case against Saudi Ethiopian billionaire Sheikh Mohammed Hussein Alamoudi. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
In the Gambia, candidates are already beginning to campaign for mayoral elections scheduled for next year. The diaspora community has started returning home with hopes of taking part in the upcoming polls. Many mayoral councils across the country are facing major challenges, ranging from poor sanitation and health care, a high cost of living, and a lack of a good infrastructure. Reporter Pandaria Mbai has details.
Council and mayoral elections are not due in the Gambia until April, but that hasn't dampened enthusiasm for the polls. Local residents and diaspora returnees have announced their intention of running for office. One of them is Bakary Baji, a Gambian who used to live in the United States.
There is no personal interest in this whole issue. And if there is anything, I think where I come from offers better. But at one time, somebody somewhere have to make a sacrifice, join the group on the ground to develop the country.
Mr. Baji was accorded a rousing welcome upon his return home by his supporters, mainly youth and women. He convened a press conference at the Banjul International Airport, his upon arrival, and announced he would like to run for mayor of the Kanifi municipality, one of the biggest in the country. Mr. Baji mentioned his concerns.
We know the major things here is about refuse collection, it's about not having good roads. It's also about people paying tax but not realizing where the tax is going.
Mr. Baji is convinced that with the judicious management of resources, the council can make many improvements in the lives of local citizens.
There's no reason why the Kanifi municipality is the biggest in terms of population, but in terms of revenue, should be where we are. There's no reason why we should. And that's the reason why the young people thought, without any hesitation, that we need to step in, see what has been done over the years, and we also bring in our own ideas, new ideas, to change the status quo.
Hundreds of people are expected to contest as ward councillors. Some might run as independent mayors and councillors, while others will be sponsored by political parties. Mayoral elections in the Gambia are observed locally by non-governmental organizations, including representatives of political parties. The upcoming polls are going to be Gambia's first local elections since the fall of longtime dictator Yahya Jammeh. Mr. Jammeh was defeated by President Adama Barrow in the December 2016 elections. For VOA Africa, this is Pandering by reporting.
French and Swiss police Tuesday arrested 10 people suspected of planning a possible attack just days after France adopted controversial anti-terror legislation. Lisa Bryant has more on the cross-border raids that some say reflect increasingly efficient intelligence communication at a time when Europe continues to face a sizable terror threat.
Media reports say 9 people were arrested in France and the 10th in Switzerland during police raids that targeted suspects ages 18 to 65. Those detained reportedly included a pair of radicalized brothers known to French intelligence. The arrests mostly took place in the Paris suburbs and southeastern France, and they apparently were in response to an increase in communications via social media app Telegram. According to reports, intelligence officials believe that vague plans were being discussed for violent action, possibly targeting France's southern Côte d'Azur region. The government says France has thwarted 32 attacks since 2015, including 13 this year alone. The police operation took place just a week after France lifted a 2-year state of emergency, put in place after deadly shootings around Paris that killed more than 130 people.
À ceux qui pensent que nous devrions sortir de l'état d'urgence, sans autre changement.
Replacing it is tough new anti-terror legislation. Rights groups say it may jeopardize civil liberties, but President Emmanuel Macron disagrees and maintains it is vital to protect the country, as he argued before the European Court of Human Rights. Criminology professor Alain Bauer says the country has made strides in recent months in averting terrorism.
Most of the operations that are made on the last 9 months now in France were made before an attack and not after an attack, which is a huge progress in our counterterrorism capacity. So there's a huge progress because most of the networks are now dismantled before action.
Bauer doesn't credit the state of emergency, but rather a larger shift in how intelligence is treated.
Going from long-term and secrecy to short-term and sharing, which is two different cultures that are totally not the same, and creating a real counterterrorism system.
Still, analysts say the terror threat remains potent both in France and elsewhere in Europe, where a number of countries have faced vehicle attacks in recent months. And as France prepares to mark the 2-year anniversary of the Bataclan concert hall shootings in Paris, many people are fearful of more to come. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Bill Andrade, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Interested in deeper analysis of news and events in Africa? Then plan to join me, Douglas Impuga, on Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll have African journalists and expert guests discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. So plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.